KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
You're listening to 89.9 KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. It is likely going to be cold in Los Angeles this weekend, so maybe you want to stay inside or go to the movies and avoid the rain. Here with our weekly film reviews are Amy Nicholson, film reviewer for the New York Times and host of the podcast Unspooled. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
And Tim Gerson, senior U.S. critic for Screen International and author of the book, This Is How You Make a Movie. Hello.
Hello.
First up, we have a French sci-fi film. It's called La Bête, or The Beast, and it's written and directed by Bertrand Bonello, and it takes place in the year 2044, where people are getting this futuristic medical procedure that purifies their DNA, and it's supposed to help them heal from trauma. And here's a bit from the trailer.
This is the first time I've done this. How does it go?
En purifiant votre ADN, vous avez déjà osé de vos vies antérieures. Vous nettoyez les traumatismes dont vous avez hérité depuis des siècles.
Okay, so that is French actress Léa Seydoux hearing about this procedure, and the man there is explaining that this allows people to explore their past lives and resolve their traumas from centuries ago. So I guess the movie bounces around from time period to time period. Tim, what did you think?
I'm a fan. Yeah, it does bounce around from three different time periods. It looks at these two characters played by Léa Seydoux and George Mackay in 1910 in Paris, in 2014 in Los Angeles, and 2044 in a dystopian Paris that we heard a little bit from in that trailer. And it's based on the Henry James novella, The Beast in the Jungle. And one of the things I really liked about the film is we have so many movies about the encroaching technological advancements that are going to destroy society as we know it, whether it's The Terminator or The Matrix or whatever. But The Beast does it in a very different way, which is to tell it through a love story. But in all three stories, what we're actually seeing is that people, in their own ways, will cut themselves off from the feelings that they have because they're afraid of their own feelings, because they're afraid of love. And so the idea of the beast is this idea of this sort of unknown force that's going to destroy us in any lifetime that we live. And so the movie is a horror movie, a sci-fi film, a period costume romantic drama. There's a lot of different genres that Bonello is playing with, and the movie has this sort of playful, sort of inquisitive spirit, and it bounces around from these different types of tones and styles. I'm a pretty big fan of The Beast, yeah.
So is The Beast us, our inner us? Is that what it is, Amy?
I think The Beast is our inability to control our own fear, our own negative emotions that keep us from happiness. You know, that was definitely the focus of the original novella. And I think it's very smart here how Bonello has expanded this into a sci-fi film, you know, which is, of course, not in the original book. I just got a little bit restless sometime in the execution, because it is also one of those films with a little bit of a ponderous pace. People talk very slowly. It's very heavy on the metaphor. But there are moments in it that I like a lot. And it is a very much a star showcase for Léa Seydoux. And you have these scenes where, you know, you get the flashy stuff. You zoom into her face and get to see her cry in one take. You see her turn her face into something mask-like. There's a lot of invention happening, even if I do get... Sometimes I just don't have the tolerance for a movie that has dramatic close-ups of a pigeon's face. But I do like a movie that, you know, has invention. Like
what if it was a kitten's face? Would you have a better reaction?
Maybe. I mean, nothing against pigeons. I like pigeons a lot. They're probably smarter than most kittens, if we're going to be honest about it.
That's true. But yeah, you're saying it just can be a little too impressed with itself.
It can for my taste. But then I think Tim is a bit more highbrow than I am.
I'm also more pro-pigeon, I think it sounds like the name he is. So.
The Beast is in limited release now. Up next, we have the new action thriller Monkey Man, starring Dev Patel, and it's also his directorial debut. It's set in Mumbai. He plays a fighter who's seeking revenge against a powerful group of men after the murder of his mother.
Who is he?
Nobody. Just some crazy kid from the gutter.
He has to be extinguished before your nobody becomes a somebody. Just one small ember can burn down everything.
Make them remember your name.
All right, Amy, this is a very violent trailer, and it seems like there's a lot in this. There's an underground fight club, class warfare, some social commentary on the corrupt elitism in India. What did you think?
Yeah, it is a very, very, very violent movie with great fight scenes, very strong imagery, an interesting setting. And this is a movie that in many ways you've seen a million times. It even name checks John Wick in the dialogue just to announce its intentions, which is a bit of a mistake because it's not quite John Wick. I tune out when a movie like this just is either, it casts all the women in it as either idealized mothers or sexual trafficking victims. You know, that's just boom, yeah. I check out. But the setting really does keep our interest. You know, these tiny car chases on streets that are standing in for Mumbai. Like, there's a villain who does yoga to prepare for a conflict. And the fights themselves, I have to say, are fantastic. I mean, they are shot and they are edited and they are choreographed so well that they almost just feel like they came in from a different movie. You know, there's a little bit that I won't spoil, but it involves a mouth and a knife. And when it happened, I just wanted to applaud. It was fantastic.
A mouth and a knife?
A mouth and a knife. And it is just like, wow. Ooh. And Dev looks fantastic in the fights. You know, he really is an actor that I like a lot. I like him a lot. And he's a person just, you know, I like to stare at him and ask what he's thinking. But the movie itself, I just wish it didn't feel so familiar, despite everything about it announcing that it's a completely original thing.
Tim, what did you think?
Yeah, Amy is not incorrect about the mouth and the knife. And in my audience, people actually did applaud in that moment. One of the things I'm frustrated by with Monkey Man is that Dev Patel has talked about the importance of weaving in Indian culture, Indian mythology, the Indian class system into the movie because those things are close to his heart, and he feels like those things help elevate this from the other types of action movies that we see. And my complaint is I feel like all of that ends up being not very compelling because it's really just sort of window dressing for a story that's very, very, very familiar. And so I will say this, as somebody who's also a big Dev Patel fan, I could not think of a better sort of resume reel for him being the next James Bond than this movie. I think that he is a very, very striking action hero, and he's never really done that before in a movie. Yeah. So he carries that, but the whole movie feels like a reel to show people that he can do this type of movie. I'm very curious to see what he directs next.
Monkey Man in wide release today. Next, we have a documentary called Girl State. It follows a group of teen girls in Missouri who start a mock government, and that follows the similar documentary from 2018 called Boys State, and here's a clip from the trailer.
Girl State is like high school teenage girls who care about government.
Are you friends?
Let's knock out. We'll become friends.
Yeah, obviously.
In 2040, I intend to run for president.
So I think Girl State, I'm going to run for governor.
Attorney general.
Supreme Court justice.
But I'm not one to be left on the dust.
Okay, Tim, this was filmed in 2022, right after we first learned about the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade. And I, Tim, really liked Boys State. What did you think of Girl State?
I really like Boys State as well. I think Girl State is very good as well. It's the same filmmakers, Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss. What's especially interesting about Girl State is that this Girl State in Missouri took place the exact same week as Boys State did in Missouri. And so what's the interesting wrinkle about this documentary is that while it's primarily about the Girl State experience, the teenage girls in the documentary notice what's going on at Boys State simultaneously because they're basically on the same campus. And what they quickly discover is that Boys State has more amenities. They have more resources than Girls State does. And also, Girls State, as we see in the documentary, is partly about forming a government, but it's also about talking about empowerment of women and also building their self-confidence. And while those things are important, it's fascinating how the teenage girls at Girls State are like, why are we being treated with like kid gloves, where the boys at Boys State actually get to do the thing they're here to do, which is to put together a government and make laws? That's the whole point of Girls and Boys State. I think both of these movies work really well as companion pieces to each other. I think if anybody was a fan of Boys State, they should definitely check out Girls State. And if you've not seen Boys State, I almost be tempted to say to people, watch that first and then see this one, because the contrast between the two is really, really interesting.
Amy, I'm really curious how the girls interacted versus how the boys interacted, because I remember there was a lot of drama in the boys' version of this, a lot of backstabbing going on.
There is. You get to see lots of different types of what female power can look like and how the psychodrama can work in a small group like that. You know, you have the girls who are known for being too aggressive, too bossy at their school, being like, I'm going to stick to that. You have another girl who, her kind of way of soft power is that she's just going to be incredibly likable. She's going to befriend everybody, and she's going to do that almost like cheerleader pep talk thing. And it's always worked for her in the past. And now the question is she going to be able to pull that off in a group of girls that's like more serious about their intentions to talk about politics? And it really takes into a question I think is like so fundamentally important right now when we're trying to talk so much about equality, which is, yeah, we've been asking, maybe we're asking these girls in this film and maybe women everywhere just to settle for kind of empty patronizing pep talks about how they can do anything while not actually treating them like equals and letting them do the real work that does let them actually do everything. And I'm just a huge admirer of these filmmakers. You know, Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss have made several of my favorite documentaries over the last decade, not even just Boys State, which I loved. They're just phenomenal. And their body of work is just incredible at this point.
Okay, Girls State, streaming on Apple TV Plus beginning Friday. Last, we have a coming-of-age romantic comedy called Musica. It follows a guy named Rudy who is looking for love but tortured by music.
For as long as I can remember, everyday regular sounds, I turn into rhythm.
But honestly, I don't think you actually know what you want.
I'm figuring it out.
Well, I know what I want.
Tell me what it is.
Rudy has synesthesia, and he is constantly distracted by sounds, which turn into music in his head. And this is based on the real-life story of YouTube star-turned-director Rudy Mancuso. He really does have synesthesia in real life. Amy, what did you think?
Oh, this is just a delight. You know, as a one-sentence summary, this movie can sound a little bit rote, but it has so much style, so much talent, and so much confidence. You know, Rudy, this is his first film. He's a guy who's kind of come up making puppet skits, music videos that he put online. This is his first movie, but it is so confidently put together that to me, he immediately feels like the real deal, like a person we have to take seriously. Yes, he does his best at the beginning of the film, just plunging us in to show us what it feels like to have synesthesia, where we see him always be distracted by the sounds of the city and he can't help trying to shape them and wrangle them into music. And we also see how he can acknowledge that makes him a bit of a lousy boyfriend. He cannot concentrate on conversations with the women in his life. Mm-hmm. The ending is a bit rushed, because I feel like he's going for something that's honest, that maybe he doesn't know what the answer is right now. It's a little bit sped up and tacked on, but the way he tells this story is just fantastic. It is shot and put together amazingly. He has this flair for in-camera effects. You know, it's a low-budget film with just these flashy flourishes, these long takes and these surprising split screen reveals. What you feel when you're watching this film is just the act of him and his team of artists just pulling something off. You know, it's all about appreciating the act of creation and how art gets made, just from the first rattling thoughts in your brain to some stuff that I stopped and had to watch twice. It's just amazing.
Tim, what did you think?
I'm a little bit less high on it. I do think it's really, really charming. And both of the lead performances, I think, are really, really, really great. They're so fun together. And the musical numbers, you know, this is original music. And the music, I think, is really great in the film. As Amy mentioned, the choreography in a couple of the musical numbers is very, very impressive, especially for a first-time director. The movie's about 90 minutes long, and I think the last 30 minutes, it really gets bogged down in problems that the rest of the movie got away from, which is really kind of familiar rom-com trappings and cliches and some sort of predictable things. I won't spoil anything, but the romantic triangle, I think, comes to a head in a way that I don't think works very well. It's the one sequence in the movie where I think Mancuso does not have the confidence to pull it off. I think it's a pretty flawed film, but there's so much to enjoy in it. I will also say this movie is streaming on Prime Video. I saw this in a theater with a pretty packed crowd. It plays like gangbusters with an audience. It's not going to be playing in theaters, unfortunately, but it is a real crowd pleaser.
All right. Musica is streaming now on Amazon Prime Video. Well, that does it for our films for this week. Amy Nicholson reviews films for The New York Times and hosts the Unspooled podcast. Tim Gerson is the senior U.S. critic for Screen International and the author of the book, This Is How You Make a Movie. Thank you both and happy weekend.
Thank you.
Happy weekend to you.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.